Radio 4. Saturday Night Theatre.
The most dangerous animal I've ever had to face on land or sea was a rhinoceros. The rhino, of course, is the only animal that will attack a man without warning or provocation. I was near the Gambia River when it happened. I came into a clearing, and there he was, not 50 yards away. We stared at each other for an instant, and then, with a sound like thunder, he charged. There was no hope of escape. I had to stand and face him. At the last possible moment, I fired. My bullet went straight through the brute from stem to stern, and he dropped dead at my feet.
Navy Man God, a play by Christopher Russell, based on the true story of the British Naval Africa Expedition of 1915 and its leader, Commander Jeffrey Spicer Simpson.
I was really sorry I had to kill the beast, but of course I had to in self-defense.
Yes, of course, Jeffrey. It must have been a frightening experience.
As a naval officer, my dear Henshaw, one learns to take danger in one's stride. More sherry?
No, thank you. That was on the Gambia River, you say?
That's right. While I was surveying out there for the Colonial Office, mind you, I've been in scrapes like that all over the world. I recall once when I was in command of a gunboat on the Yangtze.
Forgive me, Geoffrey, but I really shall have to go now. I have a lecture this afternoon.
Of course. A doctor's work is never done. Never get beached, do they?
I'm sure you won't stay beached for long, Geoffrey.
No. Tell that to the Admiralty.
Well, anyway, thank you for the sherry, and do give my regards to your wife.
Yes, of course. You and Helen must come round for dinner soon, and I'll tell you all about the Yangtze.
I'll look forward to it. Goodbye, Geoffrey.
Goodbye. Beached.
Lieutenant Commander Spicer Simpson, you are appointed officer in charge of the transfer of merchant marine officers and seamen to the Royal Naval Reserve. One of the most obscure functions of wartime naval administration.
Jeffrey Spicer Simpson, the oldest lieutenant commander in the Royal Navy.
Beached.
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 And there are no rhinos within 100 miles of the Gambia River.
But surely to God there's a sea-going job for me somewhere!
Good morning. My name is John Lee. I have an appointment with Sir Henry Jackson, the First Sea Lord.
Yes, sir. Follow me, please.
Lake Tanganyika is 450 miles long and 45 miles wide. The largest freshwater lake in the world. Until 50 years ago, it belonged to a tribe called the Baholoholo. Now it forms the boundary between the Belgian Congo and German East Africa. And in war, it's controlled by the Germans. The Germans have a railway to the lake, and the Germans have gunboats. They raid as they please along the Belgium side and in Rhodesia to the south. They move troops by water. They destroy Belgian ships. They spill British blood. In fact, they control Central Africa. A situation which must be changed. But how?
Sir Henry Jackson.
Oh, Mr. Lee, it's a pleasure to meet you. May I introduce Admiral Sir David Gamble?
How do you do, sir?
Very well.
Do take a seat.
Thank you.
I understand you come hot foot from Africa.
As hot foot as one can by ship, yes.
Yes, quite. And you're a big game hunter, are you not? We don't get many of those at the Admiralty, eh, David?
No.
Mr. Lee, what can we do for you?
It's more a question of what I can do for you, Sir Henry. I have a plan for destroying the German gunboats on Lake Tanganyika.
Gunboats? Well, our information from the War Office is that there's just one. The Hedwig von Wiesmann.
I can assure you, Sir Henry, there are three. I've seen them. The King Arne, the Hedwig, and the von Goetzen. The von Goetzen is the largest. It's capable of carrying 800 troops and is armed with a pair of 4-inch guns of the latest type.
Oh.
So much for army intelligence.
Well, three gunboats or one, if you have a plan for their destruction, Mr. Lee, we shall be only too pleased to hear it. For I must confess, we have been at a loss as to how to...
It's quite simple, sir. You allow me to take a small naval expedition to Lake Tanganyika with an armed motorboat and sink them.
An armed motorboat?
Yes, I know a route by which we could take one overland to the lake. The beauty of a motorboat is that it would be ready for action the moment we got there, before the Germans had a chance to shell it. Plus, of course, its speed and maneuverability. Now, this is the route I propose. From Cape Town, 2,500 miles by rail up to Elizabethville in the Belgian Congo. By rail again, 140 miles to Fungurume, where the line ends. Then a trek of about 150 miles through the bush and over the Matumba Mountains to Sankisia. 200 floating down the Lualaba River to Kabalo. Then finally rail again, 175 miles to Kalemia, the Belgian base on Lake Tanganyika.
Yes, I see. Perhaps somewhat lengthy voyage over dry land for one of His Majesty's vessels.
In all, 3,000 miles up country from Cape Town, but it's the only way it can be done.
But how exactly does one get a boat over mountains, Mr. Lee?
With traction engines.
Traction engines? Yes, of course. Well, it certainly sounds a very ingenious plan, doesn't it, David?
What? Oh, yes, very, very ingenious.
Yes.
A traction engine's never actually been along the route I'm proposing, but I'm certain it's feasible, particularly with ox teams and native labor in support. The thing is, we'll have to start soon. It's now almost the end of April, and we have only until October to get through. Once the rains begin, it'll be impossible. Leave it till next year, and we could be too late.
What do you mean?
German ascendancy is having a profound effect on the native tribes around the lake, Sir David. If British prestige continues to wane, there could soon be a general rising in favor of the Germans. And if that spreads, well, you won't just be looking for a way of breaking the German stranglehold on Central Africa. All Britain's African interests could be at risk. The stakes are high, gentlemen.
Rest assured, Mr. Lee, your proposals will be given immediate consideration. Do you have a London address where you can be contacted?
My card, sir. Oh,
thank you. Well, pleasure to meet you, sir, and we shall certainly be in touch.
Gentlemen.
Good day.
Well, David.
It's the most crackpot idea I've ever heard. Motorboat, traction engines, the man's an idiot.
Oh, references are extremely good, nevertheless. Army, colonial, and naval connections.
Really? Oh.
And as he says, the stakes are high.
You think we should let him have a go, then?
Well, we must do something. The War Office are beginning to make a dreadful fuss. Besides, it's both the duty and the tradition of the Royal Navy to engage the enemy wherever there is water to float a ship.
Or a motorboat. You'd better take two, just in case one gets trodden on by a hippo.
Of course, Lee's only a civilian. A naval expedition should be led by a regular naval officer.
Such as who? Manpower stretched to the very limit, Henry.
Oh, nonsense. There must be somebody somewhere.
A crackpot. Or a crackpot scheme.
Siemens Hospital, can I help you?
Yes, I'd like to speak to Dr. Hanshaw.
Well, I'm afraid Dr. Hanshaw's at the School of Tropical Medicine this morning. Can I take a message?
Yes, tell him Commander Spicer Simpson, RN, wishes to see him in room B283 at the Admiralty as soon as possible. That's Commander Spicer Simpson, don't forget.
Yes, sir. I'll leave a note on his desk.
Thank you.
Hanshaw, my dear chap, good of you to come.
Geoffrey. So this is where the war's being won, is it?
Oh, enough paperwork to sink the entire German Navy, right enough. But never mind that. The most extraordinary news, Hanshaw. Oh, top secret, of course. Not a word to anyone.
No, of course not.
I have been appointed to command a naval expedition to Lake Tanganyika in the very heart of Africa.
Really? What? That's wonderful.
Well, that was the obvious choice, I suppose. I have the necessary seniority, have served in Africa before, and I'm a fluent linguist anyway. I've got my gilded oak leaves at last, and we're off to Cape Town in 3 weeks' time. You must come with us, of course.
What? Me?
Of course, as my medical officer. With your knowledge of tropical medicine, you're just the man for the job.
But,
you wanted to volunteer as a naval surgeon when Moore Burkhardt didn't feel to be part of the service you've always admired. Well, now's your chance.
But the hospital, the school, I can't...
Well, we'll find someone who's been sicklisted at home to take over your duties there, while you follow in the footsteps of Livingston and Stanley. This way, please.
Where are we going?
First, you have to be officially sworn to secrecy. This operation is totally dependent on the element of surprise. Then you have to have a fitness test.
Oh, I see. Yes, well, we'll all need a thorough medical before we go, of course.
Oh, no, Hanshaw, only you. You'll be RN. Not the chaps Lee's recommended. They're only to be RNVR.
Sub-Lieutenant Wainwright reporting for duty, sir. Came up with the railway from Beira into Rhodesia, driving an engine and doing construction work. Now a farmer in Rhodesia, raising cattle and growing mealies.
Sir, Wainwright's a first-class man. Good engineer with knowledge of the country.
Assistant Paymaster Eastwood reporting, sir. Administrator with Thomas Cooks at Elizabethville.
Tubby Eastwood. The smooth negotiator. Gets on well with the Belgians.
A devout Methodist, I understand.
Engineer Lieutenant Cross, sir.
Cross by name and Cross by nature, but a good man, nevertheless.
What are his qualifications?
He appears to have won the motor racing Grand Prix twice.
Really?
Now, one of the fellows Lee has recommended knows a damn thing about the sea.
Beg pardon, sir, not quite true. Lieutenant Dudley, sir. I'll be joining the party in Africa. Seen action with the Rhodesian Rifles, but formerly a cadet on the training ship Worcester.
Oh.
Also, second mate's ticket in the merchant service, sir.
Ah, that's better, then. Besides, come to that, I suppose not one of our ratings knows a thing about trekking through the bush.
Chief Petty Officer Waterhouse reporting for duty, sir.
I'm told you have a good gun there, Waterhouse.
Thank you, sir.
I hope it's true because I've got a job for you.
Would that be with the Tanganyika party, sir?
How in God's name did you know that?
The doorman mentioned it on the way in, sir.
This is a top secret operation, Chief Petty Officer. I'll ask you to remember that. Come in. Yes, who the hell are you?
Lord Corporal Tate, sir. London Scottish, sir. Slightly wounded at East. Now at officers' training camp, billeted in the monkey house at the Crystal Palace, sir. Wishing to volunteer for the Tanganyika expedition, sir.
I see. The doorman told you about it, did he?
No, sir. A barmaid in Piccadilly. Oh. Have they found a suitable boat yet, sir?
Lieutenant Commander John Lee, RNVR, second in command, British Naval Africa Expedition reporting. Have found just what I was looking for at Thornycroft's yard at Twickenham. Newly completed motor launch, 40 feet long, 8-foot beam, built of 3/8 mahogany, twin screws, 2 100-horsepower petrol engines, top speed 19 knots. Apparently has a sister ship up at Dundee, so have commandeered that as well. They're the last of a batch ordered by the Greek Air Force. Both could be fitted with 3-pounder guns.
Look more suited to a boating lake than a naval engagement, Henry. And 3-pounders aren't going to make much of a dent in the Heydrich, let alone the von Goetzen.
I'm sure Spicer will rise to the challenge, David.
Morning, sir.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
Good morning, Commander Spicer. How do they handle?
Oh, not bad at all, sir. Need a few more modifications to make them men of war.
Yes, you'd better start by finding names for them instead of numbers. They're not convicts.
How about cat and dog, sir?
What?
Cat and dog, sir. Worrying the German rat.
I rather think not.
But Mimi and Tutu, then, sir. French for meow and bow wow. The boats have that certain skittish insouciance of the French boulevards, don't you think?
I leave it to you, Commander. Just make sure they're at Tilbury, ready to embark for Cape Town on the 15th of July.
Mimi and Tutu? Righty hell.
Well, they're on their way, David. 28 officers and men. The smallest expedition...
And 2 motorboats.
28 officers and men and 2 motorboats. The smallest expeditionary force ever to leave these shores.
What's happened to Lee?
Oh, Lee's gone on ahead. He's preparing the route between Fungurume and Sankesia.
Preparing for the impossible, you mean? They won't reach the lake.
But if they do, David, if they do...
If they do, the Germans will blow them out of the water.
What's the matter, Herschel? Homesick or seasick?
Neither, Geoffrey. I'm sorry, sir. Eastwood and I have just checked the medical supplies in the hold. The Navy appear to have provided only about a fifth of what I ordered.
Oh, you do worry, don't you, Herschel? All I ever had with me on the Gambia or the Yangtze was a little quinine. As long as we've got that and a barrel of purging pills to keep the natives happy, I'm sure we'll be all right. Anyway, you can always stock up at Cape Town. The rest of you will be there for a few days while I go on ahead and try to make contact with Lee.
Oh, well, that's not so bad then.
Never met Lee, did you, Henshaw?
No, I should have liked to have done, but he sailed before I had the chance. Mm. He's clearly no ordinary man. The officers who do know him speak most...
Land crabs sticking together, Henshaw. I've heard them talking about Lee's expedition. It's not Lee's expedition, it's the British naval expedition, and I'm in command.
I'm sure they meant no disrespect.
In any case, there's nothing very extraordinary about Lee. Between you and me, he's one of those chaps one meets with all over Africa. Opportunists. Tramps, really. In point of fact, I was already studying this operation as a member of Admiralty Intelligence Division before Lee turned up with a similar idea. That's why I was given the command. Lee was given a minor role just as a pat on the back.
Oh, but I...
Coming down for a drink?
Well, perhaps later.
Not a bad crowd in the first class, actually. My adventures seem to be of great interest to them. I remember Peking during the Boxer Rising. By the time I arrived on the scene, 900 Europeans, including 250 women and children, had taken refuge in the British Legation. Now, the ancient city is surrounded by a wall 30 feet high. But although I had been gravely wounded, I easily outdistanced my men and was first to scale the wall. Fighting off the Boxers guarding the gate, I threw it open from the inside and the relief corps rushed in.
Dear God. Is that it again, Doctor? Started off by putting down the Boxer Rebellion single-handed. And now he's bagged a water buck and carried it back to camp slung over his shoulders. A water buck's the size of a small horse.
The passengers seem to lap it up, Mr. Wainwright.
I can imagine what John Lee would think of his stories. To be frank, Doctor, Spicer's not my idea of a commanding officer. No disrespect to you. I realize you're his friend.
Well, our wives went to school together, but that doesn't make me teacher's pet. I shan't sneak on
him. He never talks to us except to boast. Never takes us into his confidence. Never discusses the expedition. We might just as well not exist, except as part of his audience.
Well, yes, that's all true, I know. And yet, somehow I have faith in him.
Faith and respect have to be earned, Doctor. The man's a romancer.
No, Mr. Wainwright, I think he's more than that. When he's telling those stories, he genuinely believes them. He desperately wants to be a hero, only fate's never given him the chance. When the time comes, he won't fail us, I'm sure of it.
Okay. Let's hope you're not a romancer as well, then, Doctor.
Turns out to be not a bad place. But then we're on the train, boats and all, heading north. Bulawayo, Elizabethville, Fungurume. 2,500 miles, most of which us ratings spend perching top of the boats, beating out sparks from the engine. Bloody hell.
No news of Mr. Lee, then, sir?
None at all. Then it seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth. Still, I'm sure we'll manage perfectly well without him.
But what about the route from Fungurume onwards, sir? How will we know if it's practicable?
We won't, Mr. Wainwright, until we try it.
Oh, dry country we're going through at the moment.
Yes, that's the Kalahari Desert, Mr. Eastwood. I'm glad to say we shan't be tramping across anything quite so inhospitable as that. Quite the reverse, in fact. Our biggest difficulty is going to be hacking our way through the jungle.
I don't think it's actually a question of jungle, sir. More open forest and large expanses of grassland. The worst part will be the Mitumba Mountains. According to the maps in the Cape Town Museum, they reach over 6,000 feet.
No jungle. Oh, well. I'm not going to worry about a few hills.
But you have got a map.
Map? Of course not. That was Lee's department.
Petrol and ammunition all unloaded, sir. Yes. As I was saying, sir, I think you should look at these trailers before we start towing the boats on them. In my opinion, they may need strengthening.
Nonsense, I designed those trailers myself. Eastward, is my tent ready?
Yes, sir.
I want everyone turned in early. No lights except for campfires. Early to bed and early to rise is the regime from now on, understood?
Yes, sir.
And get a tarpaulin rigged over this petrol dump.
Yes, sir. Oh, and sir.
Yes?
Mr. Lee has just arrived.
Lieutenant Commander Lee reporting, sir.
Good of you to do so, Lee. I'd just about given you up.
Well, didn't you receive my report?
Possibly. There have been all sorts of bits of paper flying about.
Well, the survey's been a complete success, sir. We've blazed the whole route from Sankisia back here to Fungurume. Uprooted trees, dynamited boulders, made dumps of firewood for the traction engines. I've made a contract for 300 native laborers with Mr. Locke. They're camped about a mile away, and they've already started work on leveling the track. It's still going to be one hell of a journey, sir, but we'll definitely get through. Here's the contract for native labor and the detailed survey report and maps.
Thank you. Lieutenant Commander Lee, it is my duty to inform you that as a result of substantiated reports that you have disgraced His Majesty's service and offended our Belgian hosts in the Katanga by persistent drunkenness and insulting behavior, and further jeopardized the success of this expedition and the lives of the men embarked upon it by failing to observe your oath of secrecy, you are hereby relieved of your commission and instructed to return to Cape Town, there to await the decision of your superiors as to your disposal.
What the hell are you talking about?
Drunkenness, insulting behavior, failure to observe the rule of secrecy. General Edwards, the British Commandant in Rhodesia, has received any number of complaints about you.
Commander Spicer, I must protest.
Then you must do so to the High Commissioner at Cape Town. The matter is out of my hands now.
Might I at least inquire who has made these allegations against me?
You may not. Later, at the appropriate time, you will have full opportunity to state your case. In the meantime, please see Paymaster Eastwood to settle your accounts and leave for Cape Town immediately.
Cape Town? Well, why has he gone to Cape Town, for God's sake? Is he ill or something? Doctor, do you know what's wrong with Lee?
Yes. He's been dismissed.
He's what?
Dismissed. For grossly insulting the Belgian flag while drunk.
Oh, what? Who told you that, Doctor?
Spicer. In confidence.
Bloody trumped-up charges. Spicer's had his knife into Lee from the start.
Apparently there's also been some loose talk about the expedition.
Oh, yes, and most of it from Spicer. Now, why should the rule of secrecy apply to everyone else and not to him?
I'm simply telling you what he...
No, this is the big naval hero you so desperately want to believe in, is it, Doctor?
Shut up, Crosby. It's not the Doctor's fault.
No.
Why didn't Lee come and see us and give us his side of the story, though? Why slink away without a word?
Clearly he didn't want to turn you against Spicer and disrupt the expedition.
What?
He wants you to carry on and make a success of it. I hope you won't let him down.
Morning, Mr. Wainwright. Any news of the traction engine?
No, sir, but if you recall, we were told they and the ox teams might not arrive till the end of the week.
Well, what are we supposed to do till then? Sit here twiddling our thumbs? Have Mimi hitched to the lorry at once.
The lorry, sir?
Why not?
It's
Some nice downhill gradient to the first river. I intend to make a start.
Beg pardon, sir.
Yes, Waterhouse.
A bicycle approaching on the starboard quarter, sir.
What? Oh, that'll be Lieutenant Dudley.
Good morning, sir.
Lieutenant Dudley reporting for duty.
Good to see you again, Dudley. Got the native labor organized?
Yes, sir. I made a contract with a Mr. Davison. He's camped about 2 miles east of here.
I thought Mr. Lee had contracted for labor, sir, with a fellow called Locke.
Yes, well, maybe he did and maybe he didn't. There's no telling what he got up to.
Well, he did leave you the contract, sir.
But I didn't know that a week ago when I instructed Mr. Dudley eastward. Thank you.
Sorry, sir. Is there some confusion?
Only the paymaster's mind, Mr. Dudley. The two contractors can share the work eastward and keep them up to the mark.
Yes, sir.
I'm making Lieutenant Dudley my second-in-command, by the way, in place of Lee. He has naval experience and understands discipline, unlike the rest of you land crabs. Very well. Let's have that lorry hitched up, shall we?
She won't have it, sir. The ground's too soft to grip.
I don't want excuses, Mr. Wainwright. I want ropes on the front of the lorry and all native hands to lay to with the will. Officers and ratings, too. Keep pulling, damn you! Keep on moving!
Sir, it's no use trying to proceed. Damn, I told them.
Sir?
The so-called experts who designed and built these trailers, I told them a 6-inch beam wouldn't be strong enough. It should have been 12-inch.
Yes, sir. We'll see what you can do, Mr. Wainwright.
Sir?
150 yards in a broken trailer. 150 yards in a day. At that rate of progress, it'll take us 5 years to reach Sankesia.
True, Crossy. But at least we've got an excuse for strengthening the trailers now.
Yeah.
And if we can make the job last a week, the traction engine should be here.
Yeah, or the rains.
Two traction engines and 48 oxen reporting for duty, sir. All in need of a drink.
Thank you, Waterhouse. Yes, water's going to be a problem from now on. Hansel, you'd better take charge of water collection when we camp each evening. You won't be doing much in the day except walking.
Right, sir.
The locos must have priority, of course, though you won't have to boil their water as you will ours.
No.
Don't think I take sugar neither, sir.
Did you speak, Waterhouse?
No, sir, just licking me lips.
Tell the men we start at first light.
Aye, aye, sir.
Morning in Central Africa. Fading starlight. A cold yellow gleam along the horizon. The campfires have burned low.
The familiar silhouettes of the boats on their trailers. Near them, the strange new outlines of the road locos, like sleeping monsters.
The native bearers are still asleep, heads towards the campfires. They stir, pick up their load, and move straight off in a long line.
It grows lighter. The ox wagons rumble past on their way to the store dumps. Then the lorry. A hurried breakfast while the locos splutter and clang to life. Then clatter out of camp with Mimi and Tutu swaying and lurching behind them. Suddenly the sun is shining, bright and warm. We are on our way. Soon the expedition is strung out over several miles of road, the progress of each part marked by a rising column of white dust.
The dust. Rising there.
The dust is soft and deep. The road locos are attended like juggernauts, a crowd of natives cutting branches and throwing them under the wheels to help them get a grip.
Progress is painful. Some days we manage only 3 miles.
But our record is 14.
The sun is blistering hot. We have to keep a few inches of water swilling about in the hulls of the boats to stop the seams from opening.
And all the time, the grey line of the Mitumba Mountains draws slowly closer. We can now see that the mountains are, in fact, a high plateau with crumbling edges, deeply scored with steep-sided valleys. Our task looks formidable. Then a tremendous mass of black cloud piles up along the ridge of mountain high above us, shutting out the sun. We stare at the sky, waiting for the cloudburst that will drown the valleys in a yellow flood and put an end to our adventure. But incredibly, the storm rolls past. Not a drop of rain falls. And we charge the first slope of the Mitumbas. Inch by inch, yard by yard, like Hannibal crossing a bleeding Alp.
When at last the local grind to a halt, beaten by the gradient, the ox teams are harnessed in front of them.
Backs arched, sides heaved, caked with dust. The oxen drag the locos and trailers up,
inch by inch, yard by yard.
When the gradient or a bend in the road are too much even for the oxen, we rig up strops and tackles, using trees as bollards, making a double, even a fourfold purchase.
Now the oxen pull downhill.
And Mimi and Peter go up.
A clever bloke, Mr. Wainwright. Irish or not.
Inch by inch, yard by yard, 100 yards a day, 50 yards a day, inch by inch.
Twice a towing cable snaps. The first time we almost lose Mimi down a ravine. The second time it's one of the locals. Disaster is only inches away.
Inch by inch. 6,400 feet above sea level.
It is both the duty and the tradition of the Royal Navy to engage the enemy wherever there is water to float a ship.
Having conquered the mountains, we make good speed towards Sankisia.
And once there, say farewell to the locals.
And them ox teams. Cool. I've had some smelly comrades in my time.
And suddenly, after weeks of effort and hardship, we are like gentlemen of leisure. Sitting back in canoes, gliding down the Lualaba, one of Africa's finest rivers. The thought that we're going to war seems unreal. Until we glance back at Mimi and Tutu being towed behind us, safely buoyed up with petrol drums and sacks of grass to protect their hulls from snags. For the first time since we left England, the white ensign flutters bravely above their sterns. And we remember why we are here. When we leave the river at Caballo, we shall be less than 2 days' rail journey from the lake.
October the 26th, isn't it?
It is.
How do you spell Kalemia?
Didn't know you could write, Crosby.
Yeah, not bad for a land crab, eh?
K-A-L.
Oh, that's... What's the matter with this train? Don't the Belgians use rails?
The driver's just stopping to look at the bridges.
What bridges?
Every single one we come to between Caballo and Kalemia. Yeah? About 60 in all. All high, all wooden, all rotten. Yeah.
I should write your letter quick if I were you.
Typical of this outfit, that would be. Come 3,000 miles just to die in a train crash.
When I was helping the Russians build the Trans-Siberian Railway, the Tsar said to me...
We should arrive at Kalemia by late afternoon, Mr. Wainwright.
When we get there, I don't want the boat detrained. They'll be put on a siding and camouflage until we're ready to launch them. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Good. Writing your will, Mr. Cross?
Begging your pardon, gents, we've arrived.
Well, where is it, Tubby?
Where's what, Doctor?
Lake Tanganyika, where is it?
Oh, about a mile and a half further on. The railway doesn't go
then
all the
I
way.
Want to see it.
Now?
Of course. Coming with me.
All right.
We follow the south bank of the Lukuga River, a sizable stream running swiftly out of the lake. After a while, the valley opens out on both sides, and the river broadens to a wide estuary riddled with sandbanks. The path turns sharply south. We walk past the Belgian camp and on through the trees for another half a mile. Then, suddenly, without warning, we are standing on a high cliff with a vast expanse of water, just like the sea, at our feet. Lake Tanganyika.
The rain's come up at last, Doctor. We're going to get soaked.
Doesn't matter now, does it, Tubby? We've arrived.
We stand there in the rain and wind, gazing out across the water. Then, as if by magic, the clouds part. And brilliant sunshine turns the lake a deep Mediterranean blue.
A nice spot for a holiday.
Yes. It's hard to believe that across the other side of that water there are people whose job it'll be to kill us.
We'll be all right, Doctor. The hand of God is over this expedition. I felt it all along.
Why should the hand of God be over us and not the Germans? Oh, I'm sorry, Tubby. I don't mean to be...
That's all right, Doctor. I have faith in God, and you have faith in Spicer.
Spicer, yes. Now we shall see, shan't we? The time for boasting is over. The time for death and wounds approaches.
Good evening, gentlemen. Major Roger Stinglamber at your service. May I formally welcome you to the Belgian base at Kalemia. Oh, allow me to introduce, please, our senior naval officer, Commandant Jakob Hoare.
At your service.
And senior engineer Marcel Jadot. Now, if you will please be seated, the dinner is about to be served.
Commander Spicer.
Yes.
We must congratulate you on your magnificent exploit in bringing your boats over the mountains. I must confess, we are betting 100-1 against your success.
Well, those are exactly the sort of odds I thrive on, Commandant Ford. We had difficulties, to be sure, but I like to think that one of the reasons I was chosen to lead this expedition was my proven ability to master problems in all fields, from engineering to navigation.
Yes, I see.
Well, of course, the main reason I find myself in command of the very small Mimi and Tutu, although I had held one of the key positions in the defense of Britain, that of senior naval officer of the Downs, is... The Admiralty considered the battle for the lake of such importance that they wanted a very senior officer to conduct it. I was chosen because of my great experience in action against the German fleet.
You have seen action against the German fleet?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about it, please. Oh. Most of us have been marooned here in Africa since before the war.
As soon as war was declared, I was ordered to take command of a flotilla of destroyers based at Harwich.
Lieutenant Commander Spicer, you are appointed senior naval officer of the Downs boarding flotilla, consisting of 2 gunboats and 6 boarding tugs, based at Ramsgate.
Night after night, we put to sea hoping to intercept the German raiders. I wonder if any of you know or can imagine what it's like to be on night patrol off the enemy coast in winter. One feels damnably alone on the bridge of a destroyer.
From the evidence, it would appear that on the day in question, you were entertaining some ladies to afternoon tea in a hotel overlooking Deal Bank Boy.
2 hours to dawn. Action stations. The gun crews are closed up in readiness for who knows what the first grey light of morning will disclose.
Well, the weather was apparently clear and fair. One of your gunboats, the Niger, was anchored to the east of the buoy.
Usually there's nothing, but this time, an enemy vessel, not a destroyer, but a cruiser. 6-inch guns to our 2.1s. She opens fire and straddles us. Columns of foam cascade across our decks. It's impossible to retreat. I ring for forehead and zigzagging wildly close the enemy. And at only 1,000 yards, I loose all my torpedoes and one of them strikes her amidships.
Standing at the hotel window, the Niger was struck by an enemy torpedo. She sank before your eyes.
One's actions in such cases are purely instinctive, of course. But we heard later that after a long tow by her escorting destroyers... She capsized and sank off the Yarder estuary.
Bravo, mon commandant! Bravo!
Lieutenant Commander Spicer, I have no alternative but to appoint you officer in charge of the transfer of merchant marine officers and seamen to the Royal Naval Reserve.
One of the most obscure functions of wartime naval administration.
You are beached.
Beached.
Waterhouse.
German boat, sir. The Kingoni.
Is she shelling us?
No, sir. That's the Belgian shore guns having a go. She's only a cable's length out. But she can talk.
What's she doing in so close, Mr. Wainwright?
Come to take a look at us, I dare say, Doctor. If they know we're here. Or maybe just an error of navigation in the mist. She's realized her mistake now, right enough.
The Kingoni heads off into the purple twilight. Smoke and sparks flying from her funnel, shells falling all around her. It seems impossible that the Belgian shore gunners should miss. But they do.
Thank God for that. I thought we'd come all this way for nothing.
Ah, morning, Hansel. Enjoy your first sight of the enemy last night?
Well, sir, I'm not sure that enjoy is quite the right word.
Dreadful shooting. I told Stinglammer he's perfectly welcome to borrow my own gun layers until they're acquired for the launches, but he got rather snippy at that. Trouble is, we probably won't see another German for weeks now.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, he's good.
She's back.
What?
The gunboat, sir.
Eastward is right. The morning mist has lifted and the lake is calm and blue. The Kingani is clearly visible, steaming slowly from north to south, no more than 1/4 mile away.
She looks quite small in the daylight, really, about the size of a river tug.
But that's big compared with the launches. Spicer sits coolly on the veranda of his hut, gazing at the boat through his binoculars.
One gun, mounted forward of the funnel, 6-pounder. Circular gun shield, 1 small mast, wooden canopy.
The gun is trained on the land with the crew closed up.
Waterhouse! Yeah. Get those men spread out! They make the devil of a good mark bunched up like that!
Aye, aye, sir!
But the Germans don't fire, and nor do the Belgians. We all just stand watching each other. And we British silently weigh up Mimi's and Tutu's chances.
Eastward, sir. I've just seen Stinglammer. He's agreed to build us an emergency harbour for Mimi and Tutu. He was very frosty about it. He said his orders were to build us a slipway within the Lacouga River. But I told him, the Lacouga's totally unsuitable. One only had to see the trouble Hoor had getting out of it this morning in that fish cake he calls a river barge. By the time he'd put to sea, the Germans were over the horizon. What's the matter, Eastward?
Nothing, sir.
What are you staring at, then?
Haven't you seen a skirt before?
Not on a commanding officer, no, sir.
Very practical garment in the hot weather, Eastwood. My wife makes them for me.
Bloody hell.
Don't panic, Tate. Old naval saying, all captains are mad, all commanders are going mad.
Look at him. If it had been a kilt, we could have pretended he was a Scotsman and got away with it. But it's a skirt. A bloody skirt. You reckon a bloke who takes to wearing a skirt's going to lead us to a famous victory, do you, Doctor?
Well, at least the natives like it. It shows off his tattoos.
Buona Chikungatumbo, Lord Master in the belly cloth, or as we prefer to put it, Le Commandant à la jupe.
Le Commandant à la jupe.
Spicer doesn't seem to be getting on awfully well with the Belgians.
Can't say I blame him. I don't get on too well with them myself.
Doesn't seem to be getting on too well with the harbour works either. 80 yards of the south breakwater, swept away by heavy seas.
Heavy seas? Bring a lake, for God's sake. If he doesn't get those boats launched soon, the termites will eat them. And the War Office will eat them last.
Of course, I'm used to this sort of weather. When I was in the South China Sea, typhoons were affecting everyday life.
The body of a young native girl was washed up in the harbour this morning. Legs bitten off at the knee. Crocodile.
I don't think we want to hear about that while we're eating our dinner. Thank you, Mr. Crossman.
Sorry.
I've been thinking about the breakwater, sir.
Yes?
I'd like to suggest we look for bigger blocks of stone than Jadot's been using. We need lumps of 2 ton or more to stand up to storms like this. There's a quarry back a little way up the line to Cabano that might suit.
Quite agree, Mr. Wainwright. I spotted the place myself. We'll start on it tomorrow.
The other thing, sir, is the launching of the boats. That's the moment we're going to be most vulnerable to attack, during the actual launching. So to my mind, that launching has got to be done in as little time as possible. Now, what if we were to extend the railway line from the railhead all the way down here?
With them right into the harbour. The trucks with the boats on, attached to the engine by a hawser, will be allowed to run gently down the inclines and into the water until the boats float off. The whole launching process, Major Stinglammer, will take no more than 20 minutes.
It sounds dangerous to me.
Oh, all my best ideas are dangerous, Major. That's why they always work.
It means white man's magic. The natives have not seen or heard a motorboat before. They are used only to steamers. They are impressed, as they are with your skirt. Let us hope the Germans will be also.
Mimi and Choo-Choo reporting for duty, sir. In all respects, ready for sea. Sir? Mimi and Tutu, in all respects, ready for sea, sir.
Oh, thank you, Warhouse.
All you want now, someone to fight, eh, sir?
It's impossible to retreat. I ring for full ahead. And zigzagging wildly, clears the enemy.
Sir?
Thank you, Warhouse. You may go.
Aye, aye, sir. Oh, and Merry Christmas, sir.
Thank you, Waterhouse.
Uh,
Hardly. Well, this is festive, isn't it? No mail from home, no cigarettes, no alcohol, not even a pack of cards.
Spicer's still got some vermouth left. I've seen it.
Well, I don't think he'll be sharing it with you.
Oh, I'm all right. I've got letters to write.
Dearest Jeannie, we've had another terrible bloody battle, but we got the victory, and thanks be to God, we're all safe and well.
You've got more imagination than Spicer, you have.
You writing love letters too, Doctor?
No, it's my mosquito bite register.
Oh. It's funny to think the Germans have probably just had a dollop of plum pudding, same as us.
Well, let's hope they can come out to play on Boxing Day.
Hail the heaven-born Prince of Peace, hail the Son of Righteousness, light and light to all.
Boxing Day is also Sunday. Church parade outside Spicer's hut. We stand smart and attentive.
Glory by, born that man no more may die, born to raise the sons of earth, born to give them second birth. Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king.
The Almighty Lord, who is the most strong tower to all them that put their trust in him, to whom all things in heaven, in earth, and under the earth do bow and obey, be thou and evermore thy defense.
A native boy appears, running from the Belgian camp. Spicer breaks off his reading, takes the piece of paper the boy thrusts at him, glances at it, nods at the boy, then puts the paper in his pocket and calmly resumes reading.
And make thee know and feel that there is none other name under heaven given to man in whom and through whom thou mayst receive health and salvation, but only the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen. Our Father, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Those of us who are facing the lake see a German gunboat coming slowly around a point some miles away to the north. It is the Kingani. The ratings are lined up with their backs to the lake. Not one of them turns his head.
For thy is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Chief Petty Officer Waterhouse.
Sir!
You may dismiss the divisions and man the launches for immediate action. Hands to clean into fighting rig.
Aye, aye, sir! Divisions dismissed!
Don't talk nonsense, Henshaw. You're much too valuable to risk a fit.
Commander Spicer, this is excellent news, eh? We put to sea now and throw her out of the water.
Plenty of time, Commandant Kuhr.
I and my vessel are unreservedly at your command, of course.
Mm-hmm. Can you make out what she's doing, sir? Is she going to attack?
I don't know. It looks like reconnaissance again.
We go now, eh? Before she escapes.
We'll let her steam far enough south for us to get between her and her base.
Oh!
She's coming closer to the shore all the time. She's obviously not expecting a sea action. Mr. Dudley.
Sir?
Tutu will attack on her port quarter and Mimi on her starboard quarter. If one of the launches is hit, the other is not to assist, but continue the action.
Sir?
Commandant Kuhr, you will cruise out of range in your river barge and pick up any survivors.
As you wish.
I shall command Mimi with CBO Waterhouse at the gun and Tate at the wheel. Dudley, you will take Tutu with Petty Officer Flynn at the gun and Mollison at the wheel.
Aye, sir.
Very well. Down to the harbor, then. And good luck!
Those of us destined to be mere spectators hurry to the clifftop.
A thrill of excitement ripples through the crowd as the flotilla puts to sea. First, Hoare in his lumbering barge, aptly named the Ten Ton. Then Mimi and Tutu themselves, surging out of the harbour in line abreast. Spicer standing up in the bows behind Mimi's gun, gazing ahead through his binoculars. The Kingani seems oblivious of her danger. The launches are well to seaward and northward of her, and she is less than half a mile from land. Suddenly she turns 90 degrees to port and increases speed, then opens fire on Mimi. The Kingani has the heavier gun, but the range is closing. Between the gun flashes, the wet hulls of the three vessels glint in the sunshine as they bob about on the choppy sea. White sheets of spray sweep over them. The Kingani is still turning desperately northwards. She ships her fire to Tutu. Tutu fires back.
They've scored a hit!
An exploding mass of flame on the Kingani's foredeck. She yaws wildly out of control, then stops. Her colors come fluttering down. On her after deck, someone waves a white cloth.
She surrendered! She surrendered, Doctor! What did I tell you? The hand of God!
I must fetch my bag!
Mimi and Tutu return to harbor with their prize. As Mimi is run ashore, Spicer steps onto the beach, and the natives run forward to welcome him, shouting and clapping their hands. He stands there dazed, unsmiling, deaf to the jubilant clamor.
Congratulations, sir!
Not at all like a man who has just won a victory.
Doctor!
Yes,
Waterhouse? No casualties on our side. I think there's going to be work for your daughter, King Garley.
All right, Flynn, how does it feel to be at?
I feel right.
Flynn doesn't answer. He's leaning, half fainting against the wheel, his face pale and sweaty. The deck is a shambles. The shell has penetrated the Kingani's gun shield, and the explosion has literally blown to pieces three men who were inside it, the captain and two officers. Blood and bits of flesh are spattered everywhere. The vessel gives a lurch and begins to settle on the bottom. The captain's mangled body, leaning against the gun shield with the thigh torn off at the hip, topples over forwards, and Petty Officer Flynn passes out.
Cool as a cucumber, he was. Standing there in full view of the enemy all the time. Only thing that shifted him was the collision when I ran the prize.
Told you, didn't I? The CO's all right.
And the way he finished the church service this morning. Ratty hell. Just like beating Francis Drake.
Dear Spicer, we have read your report of the victory with much satisfaction and are pleased to confirm your promotion to commander with seniority from the date of the Kingani action.
No doubt you will wish to read out to all ranks the attached message from His Majesty the King, sending congratulations to his most remote expedition.
Well done, Spicer.
Yes, well done, Spicer.
The ball.
Damn fine shooting by Waterhouse, I thought. 12 hits out of 13.
12, sir? Oh, I think perhaps Flynn might be credited with one or two.
Certainly not. Petty Officer Flynn couldn't possibly have scored a hit without a qualified naval officer to give him ranges. Oh, well, you chaps on Tutu played your part, of course. But it was Mimi that dealt the blows. Do you like this signet ring, by the way? I got it from the dead captain. Of course, if we can patch up the King Garney and get Stinglammer to give us one of his 12-pounders to armor with, we'll have a better chance against the Hidvig.
I'll have a go, sir. I did a course in blacksmithery when I was an apprentice.
Oh, really, Croft? I knew you must have your uses eventually.
King Garney floating again and ready for trials? Sure.
Splendid, Waterhouse. Assemble the men.
Aye, aye, sir.
You'll all be proud to learn that the King Garney is the first German warship in history to be captured and transferred to the Royal Navy.
Hooray!
I have decided to rename her HMS Fifi. This, I think, will go very nicely with Mimi and Tutu. In French, it means tweet, tweet.
Bloody hell.
Tate!
Sir!
You will join Lieutenant Dudley and myself on Fifi's sea trials.
Sir!
She keeps the sea well, Crossy. Yeah. You did a good job.
If I'd known Spicer was going to call her Tweet Tweet, I wouldn't have bothered. But look at him out there now, waving those flags about like a lunatic.
But that's semaphore, isn't it?
Spicer's semaphore, Doctor. Nobody else can read it. Yeah, he knows that.
Why does he do it, then?
Because he's Spicer. And he's signaling to the great spirit of the bar, Holler Holler, to send him another German gunboat.
Doctor. Doctor.
Hmm? Tubby? What's the matter?
Wakey, wakey, Doctor. Looks as if somebody can read Spicer's signals after all.
What?
The Hedwig's been sighted.
All hands to breakfast and clean into fighting rig!
In tonnage, the Hedwig von Wissmann is three times as large as the Fifi.
But she's at least one knot slower.
Three guns, 2 6-pounders in Ishmael Forrest, 1 Hotchkiss off.
Tutu's from a leak, so she's out of commission. It's Mimi and Fifi against the Hedwig.
Mr. Wainwright, you command the Mimi this time.
Me, sir? I've never commanded a boat in my life.
You've earned your chance. I shall command Peter. Commandant Kurt, you may come with me if you so wish instead of in the ten top.
Oh, mon commandant, I impress you.
Right, yeah.
Is clearly visible. Some 8 miles to the north of us, following exactly the same course as the King Garney on Boxing Day. This time, however, Spicer doesn't wait until he can get between the enemy and her base, but heads Fifi straight out towards her. Mimi follows. The water is like a mill pond.
The weather's warm and heavy. Visibility is diabolical for a gull layer. So much refraction. All I can see of the Hedwig's a large blob suspended above the horizon. A mirage.
The Hedwig turns and runs. The chase is on.
Every time we fire, the recoil of the running 12 pounder stops us in our tracks. The Hedwig is getting away.
She's getting away.
Wait, right. But the blaze is getting your dirty. Get back on station.
Takes the fast remaining passes and closes on the 8-bit. Then engages her.
The 8-bit stands Mimi's fire for a while, but when Flynn gets the range, she has to turn and fight.
Mimi dodges this way and that, avoiding the 8-bit's broadside, but slowing her down, slowing her down.
Giving Fifi time to get in range again with the 12-pounder. We've got 3 rounds left.
3 rounds left!
The action has drawn far away from the shore. We can see nothing, and now hear nothing. We are left in agonizing silence and suspense.
We have to wait 20 minutes after a misfire. 20 bloody minutes with the Avid journeying northwards. We open the breach as soon as we dare and dump the ox shell over the side.
2 rounds left!
2 rounds! 2 rounds! Fire!
I've never seen nothing like it. The shell hits the A-Big, she swings to starboard and sinks like a stone. 2 down and only 1 to go.
Nothing for you, Doctor. No casualties on our side, no wounded survivors.
A pleasant surprise. This time there is nothing to mar the pleasure of victory. This time, as Spicer steps ashore, even the Belgians rush forward to embrace him. The roar from the natives, who seem to cover the entire hillside as well as the beach, is deafening. Spicer again looks dazed, as if, after all the years of romancing, he cannot get used to the fact that he really has distinguished himself at last. Some of the natives force their way through to him, bearing handfuls of dust which they shower over his head. A symbolic gesture which means the land is done.
At only 1,000 yards, I loose all my torpedoes. And one of them strikes her amidships.
Bravo, mon commandant! Bravo! Bravo!
Ah, oh, Hanshel, come in, come in. Heard the news, have you?
I'm sorry, sir.
Signal this morning from the Admiralty. I've been awarded the DSO for my victory over the Hadrian.
That's marvelous, sir. My heartiest congratulations.
Wainwright gets the DSC for carrying out my instructions during the action in such commendable fashion.
Yes.
It seems my prestige back in England is pretty high. Well, not that it could be higher than it is here. The natives have taken to kneeling down and applauding me whenever I pass, you know?
Yes, I had...
It's a sort of reverence, Henshaw. Apparently my name is spoken with awe for hundreds of miles around. In fact, I understand that little clay statues of me, at which sacrifices are made, are popping up all over Central Africa. I've become Navy Man God. Well, it's quite natural in the circumstances.
Sir, I wonder if I could speak to you about the mosquito nets. Those issued to the ratings are too narrow.
Well, I haven't got time to discuss mosquito nets now, Hanshaw. It's time for my bath.
Ah, yes. Your bath.
The ceremonial bath.
At 3:45 every Wednesday and Saturday afternoon, a crowd of natives now gathers outside Spicer's hut as Tom, his servant boy, sets out the paraphernalia of the ritual. Mat, bath, hot and cold water, stool, glass, and bottle of vermouth.
At precisely 4:00, Spicer appears.
He stands for a while in the shade of the porch, surveying the reverent crowd. He is naked except for his slippers and a towel wrapped around his waist. He smokes a cigarette in a long holder. At length, he advances to the mat and throws off his towel.
Every inch of his body is tattooed with birds, flowers, butterflies, bees and snakes. The natives are in mortal fear of snakes.
Spicer hands his cigarette holder to Tom and begins a series of exercises which make the snakes and birds ripple in a way that is almost lifelike. The natives sigh and click their tongues to the rhythm of the exercises.
At last, he gets into the bath, scrubs himself vigorously, then stands up while Tom sluices him with cold water.
Tom hands him the towel. He dries himself, wraps the towel round his waist again, and smokes calmly while Tom pours him a glass of vermouth. He stands, sipping the vermouth with relish, then puts on his slippers and solemnly walks back to his hut amid thunderous applause. The show is not considered complete until the bath water has been emptied over the edge of the cliff.
Hello, what's going on? Spicer's bath water turned to gold in midair.
The Von Goetzen's here!
It's true. The Von Goetzen. The third and most powerful of our adversaries. Only about 2 miles out on a southerly course. She looks terrifyingly large. A real ocean-going steamer, 20 times the size of Fifi.
The crews of Fifi and Mimi run headlong down to the harbour.
Black smoke pours from Fifi's funnel. We hear the sudden, thrilling roar of Mimi's engines. The Von Goetzen is drawing to the south.
Now's the moment to cut her off, sir.
Now, sir. At least come and have a look, sir. Please.
Very well, Mr. Dunlan.
There, sir. To the southward. If we don't go soon, we'll be too late.
She'll be back, no doubt.
She's there for the taking now, sir.
We're not prepared, Mr. Dunlan.
But Mimi and Fifi are at action station,
Mimi,
sir.
Mimi and Fifi against that.
She's a fine big target, sir.
We wait till Tutu is back in commission. And the new steamer the Belgians have started building.
But we may never get another chance like this, sir.
I said we'd wait.
Then be so good as to go down and explain to the crew, sir.
Mr. Dudley, you forget yourself.
And you, Commander Spicer, have missed the greatest moment of your life.
Greatest moment of my life.
As you were, as you are. We're not going.
The most dangerous animal I've ever had to face was a rhinoceros. The only animal that attacks a man without warning or provocation. Although I had been gravely wounded, I easily outdistanced my men and was first to scale the wall.
We were on a winning run. I suppose the luck will change now.
This way to fight, didn't we? Not wife.
It's not lack of courage. It's just expediency. He's proved himself, surprised himself even. He doesn't need another victory, so why risk defeat?
We'd only come down to the boats, raise the man's keenness, and promise them a fight another day, instead of simply shutting himself up in his hut.
One's actions in such cases are fairly instinctive, but we heard later that after a long tow by her escorting destroyers, she capsized and sank off the Yarder estuary.
Bravo, mon commander! Bravo! Bravo!
Morale has suffered badly.
Spicer's prestige with the men has plummeted to zero.
By the time he's ready to sink the Von Goetzen, it'll have been done for us.
The Belgians are building a seaplane base about 20 miles north of here.
Objective? To bomb the Von Goetzen.
Bomb the Von Goetzen.
Bomb the Von Goetzen.
Von Goetzen.
Von Goetzen.
Von Goetzen.
Von Goetzen.
Von Goetzen.
The Von Goetzen's been sunk, sir. She was bombed in Kigoma Harbor. And then the Germans scuttled her. The Allies now control Lake Tanganyika. With permission, sir, I should like to recommend that you be invalided home for rest and recuperation, followed by a change of duties in a temperate climate.
She wouldn't come out and fight, Henshaw. That was the trouble. I was ready and waiting. But the von Goetzen wouldn't come out. In spite of their superior firepower, the Germans were afraid to risk her. They knew my reputation.
To Sir Henry Jackson, 1st Sea Lord. Sir, it is my considered opinion that due to acute nervous debility, Commander Spicer Simpson is unfit to continue duty.
Dashed bad luck about the von Goetzen, Spicer.
And the tiffs with the Belgians.
And the misunderstandings with Colonel Murray about support for Allied troop movements.
The climate gets to everyone in the end.
Perhaps you'd like your old job back.
Henshaw, my dear chap. Decent of you to look in.
Good to see you again, Geoffrey. So, this is where the war's being won, is it?
Oh, you said that when you first stepped through that door nearly 2 years ago, Henshaw.
Did I? Oh, I'm sorry.
You've seen this month's Blackwoods magazine. Mm-hmm. I've given them a rather nice piece about the Tanganyika expedition. It's really caught the public's imagination back here, you know. Headlines, editorials, articles in all the journals, interviews, lectures. Oh, there's no end to it.
Rather lucky I got you sent home early, then.
Oh, no, Andrew. You didn't get me sent home with the battle for the lake won. I was recalled for more important work.
Ah. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Have a look at some of the headlines. The Jules Verne expedition. The strangest story of the war. Nelson touch on African lake. Well, yes. The hero of the gunboats. Yes. It's quite extraordinary how people respond to a hero. Everybody needs somebody to believe in, Henshaw.
Yes. We're really no different from the Bar Hollow Hollow, are we? Navy man God.
Barry Foster was Commander Jeffrey Spicer Simpson in Navy Man God by Christopher Russell. Dr. Hanschel was played by Graham Blockie. Admiral Sir Henry Jackson, John Forbes Robertson. Admiral Sir David Gamble, William Eagle. Sub-Lieutenant Wainwright, Sean Barrett. Assistant Paymaster Eastwood, Brian Smith. Engineer Lieutenant Cross, Colin Starkey. Lieutenant Dudley, Trevor Nichols. Chief Petty Officer Waterhouse, John Webb. Lance Corporal Tate, Jamie Roberts. John Lee and Major Sting Lamber, Bernard Brown. And Commandant Jakob Hoor, Robin Summers. The drums were played by Don Lawson and Alan Ganley. Navy Man God was directed by Glyn Dearman.